produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today. Congress to vote on controversial teacher act. Congress is voting today on the controversial Student and Teacher Safety Act of 2006, which opponents say would result in a vast increase of wide-scale searches of public school students, based on even the slightest suspicion that one student brought drugs to school. In the past 24 hours, the National Parent Teacher Association, the American Association of School Administrators, and the National School Boards Association have all issued statements opposing the bill. Students for Sensible Drug Policy, or SSDP, is calling on students of all ages to contact their congressional representatives today. Please call the Congressional Switchboard at area code 202-224-3121. Again, that number at the Congressional Switchboard is 202-224-3121. Talking points and more information is available at schoolsnotprisons.com. We have links at normalaudiostash.com.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. Today, we have a special set of interviews to highlight this week's breaking news. One of America's many pot smokers, Willie Nelson, was cited in Louisiana for marijuana possession. Joining us to talk about the special relationship between Willie and Normal, as well as what we all should do in a police encounter, is Normal's founder, Keith Strupp. Joining us today to discuss some of the breaking news of the week is Normal's founder, Keith Strupp. Keith, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
It's always my pleasure, Chris.
Keith, of course, the big news yesterday, other than the arrest report out, was that Willie Nelson, a great friend of Normal, and one of America's most beloved musicians, of course, was cited for marijuana possession in Louisiana. First, Keith, tell us about the special relationship between you and Willie Nelson and the Normal Foundation.
Well, he's been a long time supporter of Normal and supporter of the need to legalize marijuana. I first met Willie back about in the early 70s, maybe 73, 74 at the latest. And when he would come through town, of course, I knew about some of his public statements in favor of legalizing marijuana, so I managed to get backstage and meet him at some point, and we developed a friendship, which blossomed under former President Jimmy Carter. During those years where the president was sending messages to Congress that we ought to stop arresting responsible marijuana smokers, and frequently when Willie would come to town, which is at least a couple of times a year, I would go out with the White House staff. They would charter a bus and invite me, and we'd all go riding out to Willie's concert. And, of course, after the concert, several of us, including sometimes the president's sons, would go off and smoke a joint with Willie. So we established a relationship long time ago, and we've continued it ever since. I also worked with Willie for a few years when I was not working with Normal. I was working to try to advance the cause of family farmers in America. And that's really the other issue that Willie cares about. Most people know about Farm Aid. He's been holding for probably 20 years. He holds a big concert every year to raise money for family farmers. So it's between helping marijuana smokers and helping family farmers. Willie and I have enjoyed a common agenda for a long time. He also has served on the Normal Advisory Board for many years. And in fact, last summer, I should say the summer before this one, about a year ago, Willie actually sponsored a benefit golf tournament for Normal at a private golf course he owns outside of Austin, Texas. So at any event, he's about as close a friend as we have in the entertainment field and a longtime personal friend of mine.
So national news this week, of course, Willie being cited for marijuana possession, although he was not arrested and allowed to go on his way. You know, tell us about some of the other police encounters Willie's been involved in.
Well, he has, not often. In fact, it's amazing when you think about how out front he's been, open and honest about his own marijuana smoking over the years. And he spends something like 250 days a year on tour, on the bus. So one might think that he'd be arrested every few weeks or every few months that he travels around the country. But that's not been the case. Number one, I think he's generally pretty cautious about his conduct and tries to keep his marijuana smoking private in that sense. But number two, he is probably one of America's most beloved singers and songwriters. He really is held in high regard by millions and millions of Americans who would otherwise have no sympathy for legalizing marijuana, but they just like Willie, and they like his music, and they trust him. Willie was once arrested coming back from a poker game. This was several years ago now, but he was playing poker with a friends of his, and he has played poker for years. Kinky Friedman's in his group and some other folks down in Texas. He was coming back from a poker game and he got tired. So he pulled over on a rest stop and he was driving his little Mercedes. He pulled over and shut the car down and took a nap, which seemed like a safe thing to do. Well, police came along and saw the car and came up and shined a flashlight in, and they claimed they could see what looked like a marijuana cigarette in the ashtray. So they arrested Willie, although, again, it was a kind of a soft arrest. They took him in and bonded him immediately out. One of the police officers at the station where they had arrested him and booked him actually put up the money to bond him out so he could go ahead and go back home that night. The end of that case resulted when his lawyer argued successfully to an Austin jury that a hand-rolled cigarette in Texas is not probable cause to believe that someone is breaking the law, that there are, you know, there are tens of thousands of people that still hand-roll tobacco cigarettes in Texas. So for a long time, we laughingly referred to that as the Willie Nelson defense. I'm not sure it would have worked for all of us, but it worked for Willie. And that's sort of how I feel about the arrest yesterday. Obviously, I was sorry to see it. I'm sure it's makes Willie's life a little more complicated as he travels around the country, and he'll survive fine, but nonetheless it's not a happy occurrence. But I will say this, I'm not sure there are many other Americans who, if they were arrested in the state of Louisiana with a pound and a half of marijuana, let alone the mushrooms on the side, that they would be given a citation and sent on their way. But in fact, that's what happened with Willie and his friends. I'm delighted. I certainly am pleased that he didn't have to deal with being arrested and bonded out and all of that. But I do suggest that if it would have been an ordinary American in Louisiana with a pound and a half of marijuana, I don't even want to think about how high the bond would have been set or what charges they might have lodged against him. I think in some ways it demonstrates that we are gradually making progress on this issue, so that even in states where they still have tough laws, sometimes there's some discretion exercised. And in this instance, I think there was a reflection that Willie Nelson is a beloved singer-songwriter, and they just simply had no desire to screw his life up.
Keith, I found it very interesting and heartening to hear how law enforcement dealt with the situation. It seems that there's quite a different attitude among some law enforcement there in Louisiana, a state that has some very harsh laws.
Oh, I think no doubt about it. We are winning gradually the hearts and minds of the American public, and that includes a lot of people who are in law enforcement. There are certainly plenty of Hollywood types who, if they had would have been stopped in Louisiana, I suspect they would not have been treated so gently. I suspect that they would have been only too happy to embarrass them and maybe complicate their careers. Willie Nelson really is a patriotic American, and he's always supported law enforcement, and he's always supported the troops. And so people can't claim that he's one of these, these undesirable Hollywood types. Willie Nelson is probably the most beloved entertainer in America. And so I think that's what was being reflected when the police decided to cut him a little slack yesterday.
And Keith, as a career lawyer and the founder of Normal, this is an essential question to ask. Keith, how should we act if we find ourselves in a police encounter while in possession of marijuana?
Well, and on one hand, you want to follow the model set by Willie and his crowd. I noticed the police went out of their way to volunteer that Willie and his folks had been courteous and professional. They had not been hostile. They had been cooperative. When you encounter law enforcement in any situation where you may be holding a couple of joints or whatever, the main thing is be courteous, be respectful, but do not under any circumstances give consent to a search. Now, it may well be that the police will go ahead and search because they think they have probable cause or they claim they smell marijuana and therefore they don't need a search warrant or whatever. But just keep in mind that if they really felt they didn't need your permission, they wouldn't be asking for it. So no matter how nice the police seem, of course, treat them nicely, treat them respectful, but they will frequently say things such as, now look, if you want to just tell me where you've got the stash, I can go easy on you, we don't need to keep you here, I can give you a citation and get you on the road, but if I have to search this car and bring out a dog, then I'm going to have to be a little tougher on you. Unfortunately, when you're under the gun and you're nervous and the police are shining a flashlight in your eyes, it's easy to say, okay, here's the deal, I got a half an ounce that's in the glove compartment. Do not ever do that. It doesn't matter how nice the police are being. In almost every instance, if you volunteer, if you give them consent to search and volunteer where the marijuana is, they will in fact turn around and arrest you and prosecute you. And the problem is your lawyer at that point has almost no defense to raise. Whereas if you refuse to give consent, in many cases, your lawyer can file a motion to suppress, the evidence will be suppressed, and they have to drop the charges. So the main lesson for everyone is when you're carrying marijuana, and if a law enforcement agent asks for permission to search, don't ever give it, but be respectful and courteous in declining to give it. If you want to go to the Normal website, we have something we call the Freedom Card, which in fact has instructions on precisely what you should say to the police when you're faced with that encounter. Sometimes to have that in your wallet where you can pull it out and read from it may be a little easier than having to think clear-headed at a time when you have so many things going on in your mind.
And Keith, with the arrest data out this week and the revelation that almost 700,000 Americans were arrested just for simple possession in 2005, you touched on legal defense, but if you're arrested and it's more than a minor violation, what should be your next step?
Well, even in the states where the penalty is only a fine and a misdemeanor, I think I would always recommend that you at least consult with an experienced criminal defense lawyer from the state where you were arrested. If you don't already have a relationship with a criminal defense lawyer in advance, go to the Normal website and under Find a Lawyer, it takes you to a map and you double click on your state and we'll give you the contact information for the lawyers who belong to what we call the Normal Legal Committee. We have somewhere between 350 and 400 lawyers who belong to that. Those are lawyers who specialize in defending people against marijuana charges. They are lawyers who agree with our position that marijuana ought to be legalized, and I always feel better having a lawyer represent you who understands that what you did is not wrong. It's the law that's wrong. But do consult with a lawyer even on the most minor of charges. If in fact you find out that you can't afford to hire a private counsel, nonetheless, they'll give you some directions. What you do in that instance is you go to your very first hearing. It's called an arraignment. You explain to the judge that you do not have the resources to hire private counsel, and they will appoint a public defender for you. So one way or the other, just make sure you don't go through that process without the assistance of an attorney.
Now, Keith, I see so many people taking on their own court cases, whether it be for traffic violations or pot offenses. You know, what are some of the traps for those who self-represent?
Well, what happens frequently is they will give you the first time through, you know, you'll get a fine of a few $100 and you'll pay court costs, but they will also almost always put you on a few months of probation. And during that probationary period, you're going to be drug tested, and probably more than once, probably on a weekly basis, or sometimes it's twice a month or something like that. Even though the initial charge was minor and the penalty was minor, if in fact you fail a couple of those drug tests, they will revoke your probation and pull you directly into jail. So if you have an attorney who's experienced, for example, then that first offense may never result in a conviction. They may agree to something, sometimes it's called a deferred prosecution, where for a few weeks or a few months, you may still have to undergo some drug testing, but at least you're not faced with a conviction on your record. You don't lose your student loans. You don't develop a record so that the second time it happens, they treat you more harshly, as of course they do on subsequent offenses. So in order to make sure that you're minimizing the harm to your career and excuse me, to your career and to your future, always consult with an attorney before you go into those. Now, if it's a minor enough case, the attorney may tell you, you don't need me, here's what you want to do, and you can go through it on your own. If they tell you that, then generally you can handle it yourself. But don't presume just because it's a minor case that you should bluff your way through. Frequently, the assistance of a criminal defense lawyer can significantly reduce the harmful consequences of the bust.
Keith, thanks again for joining us here today on the Audio Stash to cover these issues.
Thank you, Chris.
Keith Strupp is the founder of Normal, and it's always a privilege to have him here on the Audio Stash. Next up today, we'll talk more about the FBI arrest data released surprisingly this week. Normal is one of the few organizations in America that analyze and refine this data for the public and the media. Ellen St. Pierre is the executive director of the Normal Foundation in Washington, D.C., and joins us today to discuss the recent FBI Uniform Crime Report arrest data in depth. Ellen, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Hi, Chris. How are you doing?
Doing great here in Santa Fe, Ellen. Ellen, you mentioned yesterday when the FBI data came out that it's been released earlier this year than in the past.
Yeah, it was shocking. Usually we can set our clock to mid-October. For the better part of 16 years that I've been at Normal, we usually shake down the FBI people out in West Virginia who create and crunch these numbers. We're one of the few entities within all of the nonprofit world and certainly the press that every year is waiting for these numbers. How many people were arrested for marijuana in the United States? And so I was amazed to walk in the door yesterday and have the confluence of two things happen at the same time, to have the numbers come in a month early, and you know, we quickly had to crunch the numbers and get them out the door, and two, to have Willie Nelson and his family get busted on the road for marijuana.
And Alan, when you look at these numbers, 696,000 Americans arrested for just simple possession last year. I mean, we saw 150,000 people at Hempfest in Seattle, and no one was arrested. Are you surprised by these numbers?
No, because I just came back from Boston, where 60 people were arrested at the much smaller Boston Freedom Rally. Since 1965, Chris, the numbers have been awesomely consistent. 9 out of 10 Americans are arrested for a small amount of marijuana. Only 1 out of 10 people who get arrested are arrested for cultivation, trafficking, conspiracy therein. So it is really amazing to see the numbers on a graph, how clear they go upwards. When I first started at Normal in 1991, less than 230,000 people, I believe, were arrested. Now we're pushing numbers, you know, up to 786,000 Americans were arrested. So the numbers have nearly quadrupled in the time I've been at Normal.
And Normal points out that during this time, that arrests for more dangerous and addictive drugs seem to be in sharp decline.
They have, and it's not because of less use, one would add very quickly. It's because since 1995-96, under first Barry McCaffrey, the drug czar, and today John Walters, a clear concentration on marijuana and not methamphetamines, not opiates like heroin, not cocaine and its derivative crack. The government concentrates on marijuana, wrongly believing that if they stop people from using marijuana, because the government still wrongly believes in this gateway theory, that people will go on to use harder drugs if they use marijuana. So they believe if you could stop marijuana, ergo, you would stop other drug use, but no data supports such. And you've had some fascinating conversations with Dr. Mitch Earlywine on this subject.
And Alan, you spoke about the steady uptick in numbers. You know, why have these numbers really begun to spike in the last 5 or 6 years?
Well, in some respects, it has to do with the how effective police are in trying to concentrate technology and limited police power on essentially populations that are vulnerable to arrest, which is the poor. And so we're talking in large urban centers and in areas where essentially the poor are largely huddled in a way that makes it a lot easier for police. The proverbial open-air drug market, which those who live in the suburbs or live in the country are not going to know such a thing, but in the larger cities of this country, open-air drug markets are one of the worst aspects of drug prohibition. Of course, you know, an open-air drug market's not much different than a liquor store or a pharmacy, except it's in the open air and unregulated. So that's one of the effects where police concentrate effectively their efforts, whereas in the same level, if not higher, amounts of drug use happen in the country and in suburbia, but that's not where police concentrate their efforts. The other is, and if one was to provide one single tip that would reduce these numbers in the United States annually, it's simply this: do not drive in an automobile with marijuana in the car or using it in the car, because individuals, when they do so, they interface with police at a much greater level, obviously, than they ever would sitting in their living room or being on their private property. So when individuals engage in that type of behavior, and because police are trained, they're looking for this type of stuff. I mean, everybody who's been pulled over for speeding, most people realize that police will quickly go into a question about, are there any drugs in the car? Have you used drugs recently? So they're very much looking for this type of activity. And most of these arrests, these many hundred thousands of arrests each year, happen on the side of the road where most people give away their constitutional rights.
And this is part of our American culture, where we live in our cars. Here in New Mexico, you just can't survive without one, but we spend a tremendous amount of time in our car as Americans every day, really without realizing how little rights we have while driving down the road and how subject we are to search.
Very salient point you bring up, and one that I would only point out further, that exactly right. People perceive wrongly that when they get into their car, they're in essence exporting the constitutional rights, which are clearly enumerated regarding our homes and our private property. So when people get in their car and they do create this living room environment, I mean, really think of it in our lifetimes, Chris. We've got DVD players in cars, and people have plugs for their computers and their phones, and people have little mini refrigerators built in. So yes, your point's very well taken, that people have very much turned their cars into their living rooms, but they have not brought their constitutional rights with them.
That's very interesting, Alan. So a lot of this is happening on the road and with the targeting of marijuana smokers, but in places like Seattle, we have seen a 75% reduction in marijuana possession arrests. So to keep those arrest numbers up nationally, other cities are arresting even more pot smokers. Alan, you know, what regions, what places are you most at risk as a pot smoker?
Sure. Normal's extremely comprehensive, dense report on the trends of marijuana arrests in the United States, which is called Crimes of Indiscretion. It was released last year. It gives a county-by-county breakdown over a 10-year period on marijuana arrests, cultivation, possession, trafficking. And so here are the trends, and they're very clear. One, And it's very subjective. It has to do with, you know, as they say in the Watergate trials, follow the money. And so where the federal money goes, often you have police empowered through HIDTA funding, High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area funding. And so you have your great byways and highways of the United States, pretty much, frankly speaking, from Miami all the way to Boston on 95. That is as hot as it can be for police driving around trying to profile and figure out who might be driving around with drugs, etc. This certainly happens coming up from most of our major arteries coming up from the south, whether it's the Big Bend area of Texas through New Mexico, Arizona. And, I mean, it's clear, and we see this day after day here at Normal, you get calls from people who have been arrested in, say, Nebraska or Kansas, simply driving across Route 10 or Route 40 in the United States, the great intercontinental highways, and getting pulled over simply because they have California plates coming from west to east in Nebraska. I mean, this is absurd in our free market democracy, but this is the type of things that happen. Other areas, you mentioned targeting marijuana smokers. Well, what would this mean? This means concerts. This means anywhere where bands and musicians play, where police believe marijuana is being used, then those areas get targeted. You know, not necessarily fine orchestras and jazz ensembles, even though arguably those individuals use marijuana at about the same rates as people who might go to a reggae show or a ska show or some punk show. But because police take a narrow, and because our report is called Crimes of Indiscretion, all of this is based on the subjectivity of the police being able to concentrate on areas where they believe marijuana use is going on. And so concerts are a prime area. Other areas are vacation areas where people go and relax. Beaches, state parks, forests. I mean, people who are sitting around a tent sharing a joint are often surprised by having the park ranger, who is now acting not like Smokey the Bear, but really more like Smokey the Cop, and busting people for sitting around the campfire smoking a joint. The other would be, another classic example are ski valleys and ski towns, where you virtually have one road that will go up to the ski valley. It makes it very, very easy for police to pinch that road and to, you know, create a series of informants in that valley to find out what is going on. So, and of course, flagship universities. You know, all 50 states have them. And then, of course, you've got your other large universities within many states. And certainly because people between the ages of 15 and 25 use marijuana and are arrested for marijuana more than any other demographic, then police concentrate their efforts in those areas. So if you don't fit in any of those areas and you're over the age of 30, you don't really fit in a profile of using marijuana and statistically have almost no chance of being arrested for using it, even though, of course, with 780,000 people a year being arrested, as we've talked about in the past, well over 75% of those arrested are under 30 years old. So this is, if there's one lowest common denominator, it's youth or the appearance therein.
So, Alan, we're out there arresting the easiest of targets, young people who gather at concerts or on campus and are visibly smoking marijuana. You know, how much of a dent is this making in the population of us pot smokers?
Well, zero in terms of the actual effect, because we see from the data that about as many people have been smoking marijuana on an annual basis as has been for the last 30 years, regardless of how the federal government tries to twist and manipulate the data. You know, more or less, one out of three people between the ages of 15 and 28 use marijuana, and one out of seven people entirely in the United States use marijuana. And the federal government's arrest rate, all the money that it spends, let alone all those other penalties that don't really show up well in the criminal justice system, drug testing, civil forfeiture, taking away student loans, just all these other areas where the federal government and state governments have tried to impact the private lives and private choices of individuals on making whether or not they're going to use marijuana or not. So it has had no real genuine effect other than it just clearly, today you look at the propaganda, it is geared almost exclusively at the parent-child relationship, the fear that every parent has that the child will go astray, whether it's a legal drug like alcohol, tobacco, or pharmaceuticals, or illegal drugs currently like marijuana and cocaine, etc. And so much of the DARE program, so much of the Partnership for a Drug-Free America, and today just released, I was just doing a bunch of TV and radio shows this morning on the fact that, well, we're going to get some competition on YouTube. We've got the federal government today, the ONDCP, saying that they're going to come out and start posting anti-marijuana videos and other propaganda to YouTube. So they, you know, we're all fighting this on a lot of different levels, culturally, constitutionally in the court, lobbying in the legislature, but in the end, metaphorically, this is like emptying the ocean with a spoon. and the federal government is never going to have the impact that it wants to have, which it could have in the same way that when I was brought into this world 40 years ago, the government said, you know what, cigarettes generally reduce the longevity and quality of health of our citizens. So how can we create a series of laws, disincentives, social ostracization, etc., so that we can reduce the incidence of people using tobacco? And we've done that in my lifetime. It's been cut in half, and we never arrested anybody per se. We didn't take away any constitutional rights. We didn't really have to use this blunt, expensive system called the criminal justice system to impact a drug use that clearly, I mean, with 400,000 Americans dying annually because of their use of tobacco and virtually nobody dying in the United States because of their use of marijuana, our priorities from a public health point of view are completely skewed. And if we want our children to have respect for the law and have respect for verifiable and credible science, which they apparently have if it has to do with alcohol and tobacco and pharmaceuticals, because those are regulated, sanctioned drugs, we have that misconnection when it has to do with drugs like marijuana. So cumulatively arresting somebody every 40 seconds in the United States on marijuana charges, 18 million people since 1965, the sum result in the United States, abject failure.
Alan, thanks so very much again for joining us here today on the Audio Stash.
My pleasure. Thanks, Chris.
Alan St. Pierre is the executive director of the Normal Foundation. Alan joins us here frequently on the Audio Stash, and we have links to Normal's report on marijuana arrests in the United States on our website at normalaudiostash.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.